This is a Hope 103.2 production. Thanks for listening.
Godwin, you were a child labourer from Ghana, but if I'm understanding this correctly, child labour, that's not legal in Ghana, right?
No, it isn't. It's illegal. Even way back when I found myself on the cocoa farm, for me, at the time of my entire family, it was a matter of survival, just as it is for many a child across Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire, which is to the east of Ghana. These two countries are the main suppliers of cocoa beans around the globe.
So where we get our chocolate from?
Yes.
And Godwin, you said survival. What do you mean? What would it have meant if you weren't working?
It would have meant a number of things. It would have meant that I would have continued to have to struggle in terms of even just getting 3 square meals a day. I do joke with colleagues in the office sometimes that I'm still trying to wrap my head around being able to eat 3 square meals a day. So I come from one of the poorest parts of the country up north, called the Upper East Region of Ghana, which is about 30 minutes drive from Burkina Faso. I am the first born of 5 boys now, but at the time it was just me and my younger brother. I remember growing up, there were some days you go for 3 days straight without food.
3 days?
3 days. And I'm not making this up. As a 5-year-old, I still vividly remember having to be awake between 1 and 3 a.m., just chewing my fingernails just because I was so hungry. There were times where I had to literally pull my hair and eat my hair to sort of try and numb, hopefully think that I'll fill my belly by eating my hair. So when I finished junior high school, there was a friend of mine whose elder brother had traveled down south, and this is about 800 kilometers trip in a bus for 2 days continuously to get to the cocoa farming village. So we decided that we would go. So between junior high and senior high school.
It was in that period that you then traveled 800 kilometers south?
Yes. So it was because I told myself that my only way out of that cycle of poverty and violence, because my dad was very violent, he was an alcoholic. So I saw my only way out of that cycle, vicious cycle of poverty and violence, was to go to high school and possibly make it to the university. At this stage, I was 16 years. I decided that I'll go down south, work on the cocoa farm, make some money, save the money, and then buy the things I need.
So do you think that child laborers are being exploited?
Yes, very much so.
Even though it sounds like you could see that there was some potential benefit for you at that age.
Yeah, because I think that one is illegal. Two, it's very injurious to the long-term development of any child. And the other thing is that generally because you're a child, you don't fully grasp the complexities involving having to be working hard labor 24/7 on a cocoa farm far away from home.
What did a day look like on the cocoa farm?
You get up from the village where you're staying at 4 a.m. and walk by foot for 3 kilometers to the farm. When you arrive on the farm, you get your set of machete and go straight into the bush. You are there till 1. That's when you get lunch. And sometimes they forget that you're on the farm. And so they end up not bringing you lunch till 3 p.m. And then after lunch, you get straight back to work. And you don't stop till it's dark. I remember continually coming across snakes as I weed with the machete. And for me, the biggest challenge
wasn't the biggest challenge, the snakes.
The biggest challenge was weeding with the machete, because I come from the northern part of the country where we're used to using the hoe to weed.
Yes.
And so I found myself using the machete. So my very first day, I cut my right big toe.
Yeah.
And I still have the scar on it.
On your first day.
Yeah. So that was, for me, the biggest challenge. So that was a normal day on the cocoa farm, and we did not have sick leave. So if you were sick, which generally was interpreted as having a headache. So you're giving paracetamol and oxygen for about 2-3 hours. Once you can move, then you get back to the farm. And it was like that for me for 6 months. The other bit of it was when it was time for harvesting the cocoa pods, it's very difficult because you have a very long stick. Everything is manual. There was no machinery. And
no machines at all.
No machines at all. Everything is manual. So your head is tilted up in a certain angle all day from 5 a.m. till it's dark. And that would be probably from 5 a.m. till 7 p.m. And when you harvest, then the following day, you spend the whole week carrying with big baskets. You load the basket with the pods and you carry them to specific vantage points where the farmers would then ask other farmers to mobilize and come and help to crack that. And for us as the laborers on the farm, the laborers, what our job was when the beans are filled up, and cocoa beans, they'll be dripping wet with the juice. You carry that, and it's just going over your whole body, and you take it to we dig. So how they ferment the cocoa is they dig a hole. We dug the hole. A 16-year-old, and my friend, I was 15, so I was a year older than him. We dig the hole. And then put the beans in there till it's filled up. And then we'll cover it with plantain leaves. And then put the soil back on it. And you have it in there fermenting for at least 2 weeks. And then after 2 weeks, you have to, just the two of us, we would open all the holes and then dig out the fermented beans. And that was also the challenging part, because at this point, you're dealing with high alcohol content, so just opening it up, sometimes you get knocked out if you haven't eaten breakfast.
Just the fumes.
Yeah. And then we carry that onto a platform made of local mats with just wooden, a simple wooden structure where you dry the beans, and every hour you have to vigorously press the beans against the platform. And that's how you clean them. And so because of that, cocoa beans from Ghana is highly sought after globally. I mean, since when I was on the farm up till date. That's because we do it organically. So the beans are some of the high-quality beans. But the fact is that these high-quality beans are produced most often by children. As I speak, we've got the statistics says that about 1.56 million children are engaged on cocoa farms across Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire.
Do you think many of us stop to think about this, Godwin, when we're purchasing chocolate from Ghana or from wherever?
I don't think so, because especially given the nature of our lifestyles, our life is so busy and is lived on a fast lane. And also we're so far removed from some of these realities that often we seldom stop to think, oh, where did this come from? Who might have contributed toward this? What were the working conditions? How can I possibly help? We seldom stop to think about the complex issues that are involving the cocoa getting to, you know, the shelves for us to buy.
And how does that make you feel, having been a former child laborer now in Australia? You'd be seeing us going to a shop buying chocolate that perhaps came from the area where you were working.
I guess it's a mixed feeling thing for me, in the sense that one, I'm happy that chocolate that is made from beans, cocoa beans from Ghana. I feel happy, and I'm like, oh, it takes me back to my childhood days. But the flip side of it is, it also brings not so good memories about working very hard on the farms, and also just the lack of awareness of customers in Australia about where these products are coming from. So just thinking about, oh, maybe somebody, a 16-year-old, a 12-year-old might have worked hard to help produce the beans that produce this cocoa. But I'm not sure this guy or this girl is aware of that. You know, that makes me sad. And sometimes I just wish that we can pause and ask just the fundamental questions. Oh, where's this product coming from? Who might have contributed toward making it, you know? It's mixed feelings for me.
What point for you, Godwin, was it when you look at what you did on the cocoa farm as a 16-year-old, did you personally come to think about it as that was child labor, that was wrong?
That was when I went to university. That was somewhere in 2004, late 2004. So as I got to university and I started reading a lot about, because I did development studies for my undergrad. So I started reading a lot about supply chain and all of that. And in Ghana, cocoa and fishing are the two things that come up. And in recent years, gold. And I started thinking, oh my God, that's me. So I started reading about these kids who came down from the north to the southern part for those who are going into cocoa farms or gold mine.
Yeah, that was you.
And I was like, oh, I can see myself in this. Oh, the kids, they get up very early, 5 a.m. and by 6, they're on the farms. That was me and my friend. We did that. And also when I got to university. So university, I went to the coast because at the time there was only one university in the whole northern part of the country. And the coast wasn't far away from the cocoa farm where I had worked previously as a child labor. So I went back there. Again, it was about survival because at this point, my father had stopped drinking, but my family was poor. So I had to devise a strategy to survive 4 years in uni. And one of the things I did was to become a master of all the subjects or the courses that I was reading and identify rich colleagues in each course. And then before exams or after a lecture, I would then approach them and say, hey, I can explain this concept to you. In exchange, you buy me lunch. But then to pay school fees, I went back to the cocoa farm I had worked in earlier years as a 16-year-old. And this time around, because I'd finished high school and I'm in university, first year at undergrad student, I got the role of a purchasing clerk. But then I saw kids, even younger than 15, 16 years, still working on the cocoa farms. And this, I'm talking 2004, 2005.
How did you deal with all that, Goblin? You've gone back to work at the same place that you as a child were working at a time when you were realizing this is exploitation, this isn't right.
It was hard for me, but I could understand. I basically just went back to my childhood and said, you know, when I was doing this, even though I didn't know at the time, it was a matter of survival. And for most of these kids and their families, they don't have any other option. They don't have any choice. It's the only thing, the only way to keep soul and body together. It's the only way to be able to help put food on the table for the family at the end of the day. So I had to balance my awareness of the unacceptable nature of child labor and the illegality of it with the reality that for these families, it is possibly the only thing that can help them put food on the table.
So in a country like your own, Ghana, do you think child labor should be totally stopped? It is illegal, but do you think authorities should be doing everything they can to just stop it in its tracks?
I think so. I think it should, child labor, especially the hazardous work, should be stopped. But I think we need to temper law or legality with social reality. And
does this go back to the survival that you were talking about
exactly.
before? Because I'm imagining that if, and this sounds like to me the situation you found yourself in, if you do stop children from working, which most of us would agree is the right thing to do, at the same time, well, what happens to the family that those children are supporting through the money that they're getting?
Exactly. So it's a matter of striking a balance where, say, children, especially 16 to 17 year olds, in an ideal world, no child should be working. But in that reality, the context of Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire and a lot of other countries around the world, I think it's what I would say, especially based on my experience, is to strike a balance where, say, 16, 17, 18-year-olds can do a certain number of hours on the farm, because in a way, it is also teaching you a sense of responsibility.
And I was working when I was 16, 17, 18, but in much different conditions to you. I was working at a supermarket, at a local restaurant.
Exactly. So for me, I guess what I'm trying to say is, rather than say just stop child labor, perhaps is to look at what we mean by child labor according to the specific context of Ghana, and even narrow it down to that particular community. How can we improve the working and living conditions for children and their families who are just struggling to make ends meet, so they can continue to do this work, one, maybe perhaps limited numbers, but also do it in a safe way. For example, in my case, that they wouldn't be using machetes and working on overgrown bushes. They can just help with, you know, drying the cocoa where you stand around. Perhaps you can be singing songs and learning more about your culture while you're doing that. For me, that's the way to go, rather than say, it's illegal, we have to stop it. Because people don't eat legality. People eat food. And sometimes the law doesn't provide food for everyone.
We, living here in Australia, as I'm weighing up my chocolate purchases, for example, what do I do? Because what can I do? What kind of influence might I have, especially positively?
The starting point is awareness. We live in the information age where just at the tip of your hands, you can Google information. So the starting point is education. We need to educate ourselves. There's no excuse for us in Australia when we have internet, uninterrupted internet, even in our homes. So it's a
matter. There's no excuse not to know.
There's no excuse not to know. So just read, ask yourselves, because decisions you make as to what to buy, what to consume, be it chocolate or be it a shoe, can have significant consequences for other people far away from Australia. So it's a matter of educating ourselves, and specifically in the area of cocoa, you can get on the cocoa scorecard. Just Google cocoa scorecard, and it will tell you all the different brands of cocoa that they think are relatively safer in the light of child labor. So information, education, and advocacy, spreading the information around our dinner tables while we're enjoying the chocolate, I think is a simple but effective way to addressing some of these issues.
Are you recommending, Goblin, that we choose to go with a chocolate manufacturer, for example, that scores better on that scorecard, rather than boycotting other chocolate companies, to see the difference I'm trying to make?
Yeah.
Because I'm still thinking about, well, if I take my money away from some companies, that means some kids won't be ending up with any money, and that will have flow-on effects for their family. But as I'm weighing up this decision between one chocolate bar and another, am I hearing you correctly that you're saying we should support those who are doing better by their workers?
I would say so, because I think every little positive step toward the right direction should be encouraged. And at the end of the day, we would eat chocolate. People aren't going to stop eating chocolate. In an ideal world, I would say stop eating chocolate until all child labor is addressed. But that's not practical in the real world. So we encourage those that are making the efforts in the right direction and hope that, at the same time, exposing those who are not doing the right things by children and hope that they, with time, they will fall in line. But I think that economically, these companies might be forced, because your purchasing power is goes to the pockets of shareholders. So once a particular company's income level starts to drop, shareholders will start feeling the heat, and then they'll start speaking. So a simple decision like deciding to support a company that is doing the right thing in the area of child labor, in terms of companies that have high score cards on the Cocoa scorecard, yes, I would very much support doing that, because it helps to celebrate the positive steps, but also economically, it goes a long way to determine the long-term impact. Maybe not tomorrow, maybe not next year, but in 5, 6, 10 years' time.